frankly, all of us were shocked that we were getting this kind of response, because it's a critical part of the software vendor MSP relationship. Meanwhile, all of those employees can't work.
Or they're using a paper process, which is much harder to defend.
And so we're talking millions of dollars a day are getting racked up too.
For sure.
When a threat actor manages to lock out administrator access and effectively hamstring your ability to operate, the support of an MSP can often mean the difference between losing thousands or millions of dollars. Why then would this particular vendor avoid the support of an MSP for days after the attack? Often the tools of cybercrime are highly sophisticated and technical. However, this threat actor used a much less sophisticated, although just as effective, tool. The vendor's own ignorance and fear. This is the Cybercrime Lab, a podcast about true cybercrime stories, the impact on victims, and what businesses can do to protect themselves and their customers. And if you think you're not at risk, that is exactly where attackers want you to be.
In my experience, it only takes hearing what these attacks are like a few times to realize you need to prepare yourself for what could be a business-ending experience.
That's Andy Anderson, the founder and CEO of DataStream Insurance. For over a decade, Andy has been working with victims of cybercrime. He's seen firsthand the human impact of a cyber attack. Now, he's on a mission to shed light on the threats we all face from a world we can't see. Today, Andy has invited Patrick Kinsella and Armin Agai to the Cybercrime Lab. Patrick is the managing director at OnePath, and Armin is OnePath's head of sales. They're here to share a unique case in which they found themselves not only trying to counter a cyber attack, but also having to defend themselves from a vendor who thought they were the threat actor.
How did that, you first get word that something funny was going on?
We were actually two of the first people to be informed about this one.
It started, if I recall correctly, on a Friday morning. The company that was affected is in the staffing space, providing employees to third-party firms to perform services for them. And the employees that they provide are all given mobile devices, which are managed by a very common, very well-regarded mobile device management platform. An individual logged in and deleted all of the profiles and effectively locked all of these mobile devices out. And just to put things in perspective, this is how hundreds of employees would clock in and clock out to get paid and to allow this company to bill their clients for hours worked.
Wow. Yeah. So basically it's like people are showing up and they can't even start working because they can't clock in and they can't clock out.
And there's a backup paper process. This is a relatively mature organization, so they had some business continuity plans in place, but highly disruptive. Imagine it's between 400 and 500 employees all having to keep paper notes of where they were working, what times they were starting, when they were taking breaks, et cetera. And then the trackability of that from the standpoint of labor laws and how many hours you're working. Different states have different laws around tracking overtime.
So not a fun Friday. So the thing's not working. And then how do you start to get a sense of why it's not working and what's gone wrong? What's that process?
We attempted to log into the portal to manage these mobile device management licenses. And upon trying to log in, we realized our credentials weren't working. We reached out to the vendor and initially got a surprising amount of pushback, even though these licenses were purchased through us as a reseller of this vendor. The vendor took a laissez-faire approach to saying, there's no way we don't know that you guys didn't make the change. So why don't you look in your own records?
For context on that, as an MSP, it's very common for vendors to treat us as their client and for us to be the end user as it relates to everything related to their software. So portal access, admin access, everything, because as far as our clients are concerned, we own everything. We're the responsible party. So whatever vendor it might be, they don't see that in most cases. They're seeing OnePath. And so it's rare, frankly, all of us were shocked that we were getting this kind of response, because it's a critical part of the software vendor MSP relationship that we be the authoritative source for almost anything.
So through some research, we finally get to the point where we realize what had actually happened, which was that some bad actor had shifted administrative rights away from all of those known accounts, both the ones belonging to the client and the ones belonging to us as their provider, and created an administrator account, which was effectively an insulting, derogatory term towards us and the client.
Can I say that one? That's pretty funny, actually.
All right, go for it.
OnePathSucks@gmail.com.
There you go.
Wow.
As we're telling the story, keep in mind that the administrator account for a corporate mobile device management platform affecting a multi-hundred-million-dollar company has been set to OnePathSucks@gmail.com. So keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, so not particularly subtle.
Correct.
On the Gmail account, right? Talk about how you thought through those different priorities, because there's forensic and investigatory process, figuring out what went wrong, but at the same time, there's, you know, a desire just to resolve the situation and get the business back and operating.
You do two things in this type of scenario. One, you try to, the absolute priority is assess what's the current state of the situation and figure out the game plan to get the client back up and running. That's number one. And in the background, you're doing very light forensics. And what I mean by that is you're doing any of the forensic analysis that will help you achieve the first. But at the end of the process, you're going to do a full forensics. And so part of the forensics we are doing is figuring out if this is a OnePath employee, maybe a former OnePath employee, whatever it might have been. Fortunately, we have certain things in place to protect from that type of scenario occurring. And fortunately, those processes were followed in this case. So it wasn't a OnePath employee. But when you think about that email address, it was the beginning of us trying to assess, okay, what was the cause? What was the root cause? How did this happen? Because if we can figure that out quickly, then likely we can recover on behalf of the client for what's going on. And being able to isolate that no OnePath employee, current or former, had access to this environment made it very clear and gave us a better path with both our vendor and with the client to say, okay, this is how we're going to navigate this situation to get you back up and running.
Suddenly you've lost access to all of these mobile devices and their ability to log in and to control them. What would be the potential way to restore this if you can't get back access to that technology?
One of two things would need to happen. We either need to bring all these employees in to an office of this particular firm.
And this keep is in a mind, very dispersed workforce.
Very dispersed workforce. Many of them in states where this firm had no office. Or so like, ship these mobile devices back across the country to this firm's HQ, have them all reprovisioned, and then shipped back out.
Meanwhile, all those employees can't work.
Right. Or they're using a paper process, which is much harder to defend from a billing standpoint, which would likely cost a couple of employees some time. And their employees were their bread and butter. These people are folks that they depended on to do their jobs. This is how they build.
And so we're talking millions of dollars a day are getting racked up to do this?
Yes.
For sure. No one hires an MSP to be perfect. The reality is that there's always an understanding, or at least in my experience working with clients, there's always been an understanding of something's going to break. This is really where you as an MSP are tested to determine how good of a partner you are and how well you operate in the moments that matter most.
Yeah. And there's a tension between you as the MSP and the client. Who's at fault here?
So the vendor's first reaction was, how do we know that this wasn't you doing this or your end client making this change? To which your first reaction is to literally laugh. Okay, yes, we went in and made a change and changed this to a Gmail account disparaging our name. And it's like, well, how do you know it's not an employee that's done this? And we had gone through all the logs and found the number of employees that had access to this particular access method for this credential. And we were able to have a high level of confidence that it wasn't something done by a bad actor internally.
So you call the vendor and they basically tell you, this is your fault. I'm not going to give you access to it.
So the vendor's initial reaction was, we have no way of knowing this wasn't you or wasn't the end user saying, we're frustrated with you.
This is the definition of Kafka-esque bureaucracy, like bureaucracy with rules that in some ways make no sense.
At some point, you have to say, well, wait a minute. My vehicle was stolen. Here's a copy of the registration card. And here's a copy of my driver's license. I own that vehicle. It's parked right there. Give me the keys back, please. I see them in your hand. Please give me the keys back. Here's the receipt where I paid for it.
Yeah.
Here's the title. From my safe, please give me the keys back.
This is a good analogy because this is how it felt.
And this is how it felt.
So then what happens?
Of course, we completely blew our tops. Now, this has been going on over a period of days, and we've been spending most of our energy on the rebuild process of building out a new tenant for this client. The plan to let's ship the phones back, let's get the employees in, let's just focus on getting back up and running. And it now became almost secondary. Fortunately, our COO had a contact that happened to know someone at this vendor that was in a relatively senior position and was able to overrule to some extent this policy, where they were willing to share with us some documentation that might be sufficient. But then a strange twist was that it couldn't come from our domain. I had to send it from my personal email address into this vendor, including a copy of a signed letter from the chief financial officer of this business. And we heard nothing for a period of 2 days, 3 days. We called in to follow up, and there was something about the letter that they didn't like. And they weren't going to call us and tell us that. We had to call in and ask why we were hearing nothing. They eventually told us what they needed to see. We were able to obtain some emails out of our archive from 3 years earlier when we initially created the tenant. And once we got that to them, they reset the account. We now believe, and this is a fair point to share this, there were two employees of this firm that about a year prior, we had identified through some of our monitoring tools, had gained illicit access to the email inbox of the CEO and had been spying on the CEO's emails and sharing them around the company. And we presented this evidence based on that discovery to the CEO and CFO, and these two employees were terminated. There were threatening communications made from personal contacts from these employees following that termination to our firm over the period of a few months. It's highly likely it was one of these individuals that did that.
They were disgruntled because essentially you had basically caught them spying and then proceeded to help get them fired, right?
Correct. They were extraordinarily hostile towards us and made that very clear.
They still had access to some things. They hadn't been offboarded necessarily from all of the systems effectively. Was that kind of what? That's why they could still get back into this.
So it's likely that they either retained access or they had a copy of administrative password that had not changed and did not require multi-factor authentication.
That's actually a really important point. We do know that there was an administrative password that hadn't been changed in a substantial amount of time that was used on the client side. Think about this from the MSP perspective. This resulted in a massive change on our side in which we implemented a forced password policy for all of our clients, regardless of whether or not it's our access that's being restricted. We need to elevate who you are, how you act, because us being involved should mean that we collectively are a better IT organization. And we consider ourselves to be more of a partner. And that's been a cultural shift with how we interact with most of our clients as a result of this incident.
That's a huge cultural shift, right? It's telling your client you won't do business with them in this area of the business if they're not willing to abide by comparable standards to what you use.
Prior to this, we never would have.
We would not have done that prior to this event.
We have this conversation all the time with end customers and even with MSPs and other tech folks. And they're like, we actually don't have our data. We've put everything in cloud systems. It's managed by a third party. I still believe that it's better to be doing that and putting stuff there than to be trying to maintain on-prem solutions that are highly vulnerable to attack. But it makes you really think about, do you have redundancy? Have you really thought about the terms and conditions that relationship is going to live under?
That's my lesson learned for this was, you have to recognize that these vendors, these large vendors that all of us buy services from, their contracts are written such that they don't carry a single dime of liability for anything that they do. And unless you are as large as they are, you are at the mercy of their contract lawyers. And you have to build your redundancy plans and your security practices around that knowledge that this vendor is not going to help you. They are not law enforcement. You're speaking with a third party that you pay good money to, that it's in their best interest to just step away from it completely. Take a laissez-faire approach so that no one can ever point to them and say that they influenced the outcome. They did nothing is the safest approach.
Patrick and I have probably had this conversation 4 or 5 times since this event. There's a group of people, bad actors, threat actors, whatever term you want to use, that the dark web that are effectively working together against business to try and find vehicles to money. And they're structuring their units like organizations with sales teams, accounting teams, marketing teams. Patrick tells a funny story about how we had a client get a survey after their ransomware event to say, how was our
is a law firm in Arizona that was working with one of our endpoint threat detection vendors. And after they paid the ransom, the CEO of this endpoint threat detection vendor got a smile back survey. A bunch of airports use them as you come out of the bathroom. How clean was the bathroom? Green smile, yellow flat face, or red frown. They got a smile back survey and then a request to rate them. If you wanted to negotiate with a criminal on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely would you want it to be us again next time? Were we good to negotiate with?
We've now started realizing that community works really well together. And our community of, you know, the good guys, we're all deciding to hide information. We don't want to have these conversations about security events. Even Patrick and I are being very careful to limit the amount of information, what vendor, what client, this, that, and the third. There's a cultural implication of how we work through security events because there are a lot of people who are working together to try and start these problems. And there are a lot of people who are working independently to try and stop these problems. And so when you think about that and the conversations we're having, it's affected how do we talk to clients about the importance of partnership as it relates to security, the importance to have access, the importance of a collective organization. We've changed our tune to and even changed the way we operate operationally to where we really want our internal IT team to feel like they're a part of our client's organization. And we've structured our operations such that that's possible. And we've structured our culture such that that's possible. And so from the relationship aspect, there are a lot of things we do and a lot of communications we make that are centered around this idea of we need to be a collective of people or a collective of individuals working against these security threats because we're working against the collective.
I think folks feel like, oh, I know that this large networking vendor, large cloud vendor is they're on my side. They don't work with the criminals, so they'll have my back. And the reality is that absolutely none of that is true. Because we're in business, we're all out for ourselves. And as long as you navigate the waters with that knowledge in mind, that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. You just have to be painfully aware of that and make decisions about what you do for your business or your organization with that knowledge at the forefront of your mind.
And incredibly diligent about making decisions.
Right.
Be decisive, make decisions, understand that these investments are a requirement and that diligence is really the key word there. Be diligent in the decisions that you make around your security posture, your security policy, prioritize those things. Because to Patrick's point, you're on an island.
Yeah, and I think details matter for sure. And the relationships matter too. And having those conversations and reading what are the contracts that are there and understanding them. It sounded like this organization had at least done some and likely with your help, some thinking about how would we operate. We have a paper process. We have redundancy. So often the conversation is around security and how do we lock down these processes and how do we make it harder for them, someone to disrupt them? Absolutely important, but also an appreciation that things will break. Have you put in redundancy around particularly those core processes? And have you thought about particularly the interrelatedness of a lot of these systems and are there single points of failure and how do you remove them, build redundancies, particularly at those super vulnerable places? You've got to arm yourself and prepare for the unexpected.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cybercrime Lab, brought to you by Datastream Insurance. When the worst happens, you're going to want the best financial, legal, and technical support to get you back up and running again. With cyber insurance from Datastream, we find the most comprehensive insurance coverage on the market alongside critical post-incident customer support. Go to datastreaminsurance.com today and see how we can help you secure your business data. That's datastreaminsurance.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. You'll find show notes and any resources mentioned at cybercrimelabpodcast.com. We hope you'll join us next episode. Until then, stay safe. More importantly, stay ready.